MDRadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one tasty treat? I know that you are, and I know you know. That means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and you know, I get questioned all the time about, hey, Dr. Mike, you've spurred my inner chef. I am so interested in learning how to prepare some of these things you talk about, you know, with Chef Luca on segments like Culinary CPR. Where can I go to get training? And I can't recommend enough the program where yours truly is on faculty. That's the University of Montana, Missoula College at the University of Montana. If you head over to mc.umt.edu, that's mc.umt.edu, and just click on the business technology page, you'll see the culinary arts program. Chef Campbell has put together an outstanding award-winning program. You won't be disappointed. One of the few certified programs that you can find around the country. Absolutely amazing. And speaking of amazing chefs, we've got our own Chef Luca with us today. You know him, you love him, you can't live without him, because wherever he goes, he wins. He's a winner. He's dominated Food Network. He's won all the awards in New Hampshire. You know, like New Hampshire is like his private personal playground. But what you probably didn't know, that he's also got his own weekly radio talk show, What's Cooking with Luca Paris. If you want to check that out on Thursday mornings, he's a monthly guest on Cook's Corner on ABC's WMUR Channel 9 in New England. And we've got a YouTube channel, Culinary Journey with Luca Paris. You definitely want to check that out. And we're going to make sure he tells us how we can tune into YouTube, because YouTube TV is going to be a big thing now, so you can get it on your smart devices. Chef, welcome to the program, my friend. I am always humbled to be in your presence.
The pleasure and the honor is always going to be mine, Mike, and it's great to be with you. Love seeing all the stuff that you have going on and keeping busy out there. Ancient Eats is an incredible book. I'm telling you, I could be reading that 100 times a day, so it's been fun. I use it. For what my last vacation, for what little downtime I had, was hitting that up. So that was a lot of fun. A lot of knowledge in that. So thanks, man, for that.
Oh, enjoy doing that. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, my mission is to help spread that knowledge. And, you know, I think one of the things you and I have talked about a lot on the program is, you know, when we look at different cultures and we can take these healthy, these foods, and by selecting quality ingredients, they you know, split the uprights between delicious and nutritious. And, you know, we got to get away and shift this paradigm that, oh God, if it's good for me and it's healthy, you know, it can't taste good. And we learn not only from contemporary cultures, but, you know, that's one of the things that's really amazed me about doing the research for Ancient Eats. It's something, you know, given your history, it was probably second nature to you to appreciate that, but I think for a lot of folks, it's not.
Well, I think that, and that's the biggest thing. And what you're doing is the same thing that historians do. If we don't learn from our past, we're never gonna, you know, benefit our future. And if we forget where we came from and how it used to be, what lives were like when we would eat what was available, when it was available, which was right for us to live in whatever climate we are or where we are. If we get away from that, we notice the differences in our body and our health and how we feel certain times of year, and how we grow up. And you're showing us where things came from and what it's like, and it makes a big difference. And if people could learn a little bit about the history of where what we used to have, maybe we'll think about things differently. And that swing and that pendulum is definitely going in the other direction when you see restaurants doing it, when you see chefs on TV, and then you have people like you out there and touting it every day. It's a beautiful thing. And I think little by little, one listener at a time, one reader at a time, one blog at a time, people are understanding what is good for us. And, you know, it might not be our generation that gets fully in there, but our kids are starting to see that, and they're seeing the difference. And I think little by little, we're going to be making changes quickly.
Well, you know, I think that it's certainly, you know, I'm beyond, in a lot of ways, I'm just, you know, beyond salvation. But when it comes to food, you know, my youth was filled with way too many, you know, Libby's and Hungry Man dinners, you know, for me to ever make a full recovery.
I still can remember when she pulled back the tab. And this is, I grew up in an Italian household where she made everything regular, but when she found Hungry Man dinner, she's like, I'm pulling back this little foil and you're eating it. I'm like, okay. That was before microwaves, too.
Well, that was. that was the convenience. But and you bring up a really great point, which is and I think it's really become an Achilles heel to folks getting out there, breaking the addiction and the ill health that, you know, every single day I'm reading more and more great science coming out showing, you know, that our diet, particularly the modern Western diet, you know, the root cause of so many of the disabilities and diseases we suffer with. But it's this concept of convenience. You know, we've gotten so busy that, you know, the effort to, like, you know, throw something on a stove versus heating, you know, something prepared in a microwave has become a big hassle. And we've really, I think, on that altar of convenience, you know, sort of sacrificed both our taste buds, you know, and our health. And thank God there are chefs like you out there who take the time to source, take the time to prepare stuff. You know, I know how much pride you put in the product that you put in front of folks. And this is the key. It's real food. And, you know, you're here all the time, you know, really helping us make this real food delicious. And that's what makes it sustainable, I think, from a dietary perspective. You know, we could talk nutrition till the cows come home, you know, be there free range, organic, right, grass-fed cows. but you know, it doesn't make people don't eat nutrition. People eat food. And what you're doing and showing them how to make this quality meal that's absolutely delicious and it's obtainable, man, you opened the door to this. You know, we're following in your wake. So thanks, my friend, for continuing to do this. Thank you for being here doing this.
It's been a lot of fun. And you know what I notice when we do live events, and I know you probably get the same thing too, is I have yet to do a live event where I make anything that's much more complicated than one pan or a couple of different steps, where when they look at it in the final product, they go, wow, you just made that. I said, yeah, well, I don't know how to cook. Well, you really do know how to cook. It's really simple. It's what you've stayed away from it because there was this fear or this whatever. Let's see if we can get everyone to stop thinking like that. Start small, start easy. I mean, when we talk about this maple glazed duck breast, the reason why it's got five ingredients and the reason why it's the simplest presentation of a duck breast is mainly because people are afraid to cook duck breast. And I'm telling you, it's one of the most amazing, succulent, incredible pieces of meat, even with all that fat, but good fat, and all this great stuff. So why not? Let's show it in a simple preparation, and then you start from there. And then if you want to get more complicated, if you want to try different variations, you can do it. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And that's what I try to do, and you do the same thing. It's get us away, and you know, I know, well, on your show, and I've heard it before, and I've read it in your books, you know, the added sugars and processed foods not being good for you, whatever, but you know me, I'll put sugar, or I'll use a local maple syrup or something for substitute, which is totally different than all this added stuff that you're buying in prepared foods. So,
well, yeah,
I think it could be a big difference.
Well, yeah, and when you're starting, and the bulk of this meal, and this is an important concept for folks to understand, because like you said, they look at the recipe and they say, oh my gosh, there's maple syrup in here, you know, God, that's sugar, I can't add that. Well, number one, maple syrup is very different than refined white sugar.
Exactly.
You know, it is what I call sweeteners of redemption, meaning that they have minerals, elements, manganese, magnesium, you know, other compounds, because they're natural. You know, it's tree sap, right? It's the lifeblood of trees, maple trees. So it is filled with really, you know, healthful types of compounds. One, that differentiates it from refined sugar. Two is let's look at our proportions. And that's something I don't think we spend enough time talking about, you know, when we address sort of the healthful aspects of food. We want to have this balance. We want flavors. We want to taste it and have it bring us joy. But we also, you know, don't want it to be just, you know, a candy bar and be 90% sugar. So when we're looking at the bulk of this meal being the protein, from the duck breast, you know, a little maple syrup, a little butter, that's, you know, when you look at it per serving, it turns out to be sort of minuscule. And again, we're talking about a natural ingredient, not a refined ingredient. There was a recent study came out, and this really sums it up. So our diet, the modern Western diet, what most people, folks, eat, has gotten so bad that we now have, and the FDA classifies this, many folks aren't aware of this, not only do we eat processed food, we actually have ultra-processed food now.
Oh, my God.
Now, this ultra-processed food contains a lot of things in it so that it looks like it's not processed food.
Right.
So that's one of the working definitions, is I'm going to add all these artificial sweeteners and flavors, et cetera, to make it taste like natural maple syrup, because it's really not natural maple syrup in any way, shape, or form. This constitutes 60% of what the average American eats. From that 60% of ultra-processed foods, that bit supplies 90% of the refined sugars in the modern Western diet. That's so true. You start eliminating these ultra-processed foods and incorporating a little sweetness, because, hey, who doesn't love a little sweetness, right?
Sure.
You incorporate a little natural sweetness. It's like when we season with salt and we're salting the salt breast, you know, that's not where we talk about, again, the sodium in diet. It's not coming from properly seasoning fresh food. It's coming from your processed food that's 70% of, you know, what is in your grocery cart. So, you know, I think that that was an important point to highlight before we get to the recipe that you'll walk us through. And one other thing I wanted to touch on was, folks, don't be afraid of the fat in duck fat. Naturally raised, organic, again, pastured duck. Almost all this fat, very high in oleic acid. Lucas from Italy, he knows what that means. That means olive oil. That means it's good for you. So don't worry about that. So, all right, Chef, you take it away now. I'm getting off my podium.
Well, no, and that's really important, because I don't think we've ever brought up duck breast when you and I have talked about cooking. It's big in restaurants and what have you, but to do it at home, it's really simple. And it's not much more complicated than cooking a chicken breast. And it is something that's a little bit feared. There's a little, I go by this kind of little 4-2-2 method that I picked up a long time ago. You cook 4 minutes, we'll talk about more, but 4 minutes cook on the fat side, 2 minutes on the meat side, 2 minutes in the oven, you're going to get a rare duck breast that's phenomenal. And like beef, you could cook it medium rare, or well done. I like it in the medium rare to medium category, because then a lot of that fat's rendered out, and we'll talk about that in a little bit too. So it's not that hard to eat. I like it not cooked all the way through. I think that's a big key to this. And today's recipe is going to be a maple glazed duck breast. Now, getting an organically raised, a good quality duck breast is really important. You might have to buy it as a whole duck and break it down, but if you have a good meat guy and somebody you could go to and you could buy it. They even have it packaged that it's packaged right as just the breast itself. We'll do a whole nother show on confit duck legs, which can take
Thank
over
you.
Your world. So we'll definitely talk about that. But it's really simple. It's a skin-on product. It's something you could get at the store. Always look for the best quality. If you have local farmers that raise duck in the area, go for it. They'd love to sell you their duck. And it's going to be absolutely wonderful. And they're all going to have this fatty breast to it. And that's a big part of it. Now, let's say we got these duck breasts. And then in this case, with our recipe, we have 4 duck breasts. It's a maple glazed duck breast. Basically, 5 ingredients. The duck breast, cup of local maple syrup, if you get it. If not, make sure it's a real maple syrup. Back to a little history. We started talking about doing our Swanson Hungry Man dinners. I grew up in the Bronx. And somehow, some way, some form, we
no,
never
no
even
way.
Real
did you really now all this time yeah. You and I've been together. I was born in the Bronx.
No way.
Yeah,
correct. You know,
South Bronx, man. South Bronx. Fox
no
Street.
Way. That's too funny. I was.
Oh
gosh,
I knew I liked you from the moment I met you, man. You're from the hood. You, me, and J Lo. We're all from we're all from the hood.
Well, here's the tangent of all tangents. J Lo went to junior high school in the same area I went to school, but she went to the Catholic school next to us. So there you go. And we're roughly the same age, so there you go. Anyway, let's jump right back on it. Never met her, and I never will, so I'm never going to get that famous. Anyway, so we have the maple. So growing up, we only, you know, you had those name brands that you thought were syrup. They were the pancake, quote, syrup.
And Mrs. Butterworth.
New Hampshire. Yeah, exactly. I move up to New Hampshire, and I have my first taste going to a sugar house and have my first taste of real maple syrup and talk about a next to heavenly experience. It didn't even taste like what the other stuff tasted like. And when you go backwards, that you could taste all the artificial flavors in there and all the corn syrup and the way it's made. And I can't believe that I've never had real good maple syrup till I came up here. And now I can't have any other way. Once you go there, you're never going back. So it has maple syrup. It has cayenne pepper. You want to always balance.
So, Chef, let me ask you something. So when folks go shopping for the maple syrup, they often see different grades of maple syrup. Does that make a difference in this recipe for folks that are shopping? Should they get one or the other, or it doesn't matter?
It's funny because I don't know what your take is on it, but what I do now, Stewart and John's is my maple syrup house down the road, and they just changed, and I wish I remembered the change of the categories. In the state of New Hampshire, I don't know if this is nationwide, but I know here we've changed from grades to different color coatings, like amber and darker and all these different grades. So I got totally confused with it. But depending on what you want to do, I wouldn't get a real heavy grade of syrup, something really rich that's going to have almost caramel to it. You want to get a little bit lighter, but not the lightest grade possible. Somewhere in between is what I like to use for cooking. Do you have a preference?
I'm kind of like you. It'll depend what I'm doing. You know, if I'm doing something where I want a really strong, deep, rich maple flavor, like maybe in a dessert sort of thing, then I'll go for that more complex, you know, heavier,
darker.
You know, richer. Yeah, darker. Yep. But, you know, in something like this where, you know, you want sort of the essence of maple syrup and you don't want it to overwhelm the dish, I'm 100% with you.
So you get some medium grade syrup like an amber and you'll be fine. Look, you'll find them on the shelves too, and they'll say real. Check the ingredient list. When they say real maple syrup, make sure it says real maple syrup. There's really only one ingredient in maple syrup is the syrup.
And it would be maple syrup, right?
There shouldn't be an ingredient list. There shouldn't be anything else unless it's a spiced syrup. So other than that. But we do want to do balance, a little cayenne pepper. We are going to add salt and pepper. You don't want a totally sweet dish. I know we're going to add some brown sugar to this, but it's basically a tablespoon, and that's just breaking into the sugar. If you don't want to add that, you don't have to. But just maple syrup, cayenne pepper, salt and pepper is really all you need to make the glaze for this. So it's really
easy. That is so simple.
Go ahead. Huh?
I was just saying that is so simple.
And that's all you really need. Now, why I'm starting here is because I want people to try it without going crazy. I mean, we could add in some Chinese five spice because, to me, Chinese five spice and duck almost sound like they should be. Szechuan peppercorns, if you want to use those and grind, you know, toast those a little bit, then grind them up and then use them as a topping. That's a great way. But if you just want to get into the essence of simple duck breast, this maple glaze, I love, you know, the time of the year when March starts, and then the weather starts changing and the sap starts running on the trees up in New England, I start thinking I want to put everything with maple syrup. So
I want to ask you one other thing about maple syrup. So, and I'll tell folks, and you know this, it's in your genes, you know, hey, when you're using olive oil, you know, don't save it. It's a perishable item. You know, it's essentially a fruit juice, if you will, in a form. Do we have to worry about the same thing with maple syrup? So is there an expiration date? Should we worry about it? Is there seasonality when it might be better in one time than another?
You're looking at me going, I don't think I ever have maple syrup in the house for more than a month before I'm going to get more. you know, there are times of the year it's going to come out. So now, just like good wines, just like good cheeses or what have you, but especially wines, each season brings you a different type of syrup, which is really cool. And that's something I got to learn by being not too far away from some sugar houses, is that depending on the temperature, because the idea of sap running out of the trees is warm days, cold nights, lets the sap run, you're going to get a lot of warm days, cold nights. I just want to make sure I was on the right way. So we'll tell you what kind of sap you're getting out of these maple trees, and then cooking it down, they start realizing, because of the humidity and this, that, or anything, they start realizing what type of syrup they have for that season, how much syrup. So each year brings a little difference. And I'm not at that level where I could taste one year to the next. You can hold, I mean, as long as it's held well and it doesn't get too hot in your temperature, you can hold syrup. But honestly, if you're not using syrup from that year, I don't know what you're holding it for. That's not, it doesn't make any sense to me. But that's only because I love using it. So going back to the recipe as far as that goes, you know, our five ingredients, that's all we need to make this thing work. And it's really about cooking the duck. And really, there's a couple of steps to remember about cooking the duck. First of all, you're going to make sure your skin is dry, your fatty part is nice and dry, and actually the whole duck. And then you're going to do these cross hatches or crisscross on the skin of the duck, because we want to expose as much surface area for the fat to render as possible. And here's where seasoning with salt and pepper on top, that's the only thing I like to do. I know if I do any other spices, I usually do them on the bottom, because I don't want to change the color of the top. I want this nice, crispy, golden skin. So real salt is great on that, a little fresh cracked black pepper or just salt. And as I make my little cross hatches in the skin, not breaking into the meat, just the skin or the fat itself. I shouldn't say skin, the fat itself. I make these cross hatches, so I'm opening them up. As I put on the salt, I don't just sprinkle it. I actually rub it into those crevices so I could open that up a little bit.
Massage your breast.
What's that? Always massage.
Always massage your breast.
That's a whole different show, man. I don't know how to do that one.
That's doctor's orders.
Can you write me a prescription for that? No, I'm sorry.
Yep, I got it pre-printed.
So we have them nice and rubbed down and sitting there. And then the pan, this is the one thing that's really different. You and I always talk about getting a pan hot, getting your fat or your heat, your oil hot, and then adding the protein to the pan, because you want to get a sear on there and you want to, you know, start breaking it down and then start caramelizing, yada, yada, yada. Well, this starts totally differently. So whether you're using a nonstick pan, which some people like to do for the first couple of times, or a cast iron pan, it's a cold pan starting to warm up with the skin in there or with the fat side down of the duck in the pan. Now, here's what happens. It allows the duck fat to render, and as you render the fat, and usually you have a nice little cap of fat on a good duck breast, as that renders down, you don't have to put any oil or anything, because it's actually going to cook it in its own fat, and you'll remove some of it from time to time because you want that to be a golden, real nice golden brown sear on that skin. So as it renders down, 4 minutes is a good number. If it's really fatty, it might take a little bit more, but you'll see the fat cap kind of reduce down to close to the meat. This is the most important thing. And the other thing is, do not throw that duck fat away. Right, Mike?
We never throw
duck fat away.
That is some gold. And resist the temptation to take a peek and turn it over, because that starts to crisp, it'll stick to the pan and you'll peel it all off. So
exactly.
You do what Chef Luca tells you, then put your hands in the air and walk away for a couple minutes.
Let it cook down. You're not doing it on a really high heat. The temperature is rising slowly. So the fat renders off, as opposed to sealing the fat in. We don't want to seal the fat. We want it to render. Then at near the end of it, you've seared it. You've gotten it down to this beautiful, crispy, golden fat. What you're going to do is flip it over for 2 minutes on the other side that you've salt and peppered as well. Flip it over only for 2 minutes. And then this is where we take that maple syrup, cayenne pepper, brown sugar that we've whisked in the pan, and we pour it into the pan. And let, because we got the heat going on. We've removed some of the duck fat. I didn't want to skip that step. You want to remove some of the duck fat because you don't want it just to be this real fatty sauce. It's almost like a maple glaze on the duck. As we add that little glaze, we flip it back over onto the fat side into that glaze. Let it cook down. Now it's really starting to caramelize into the skin. And you pop it in the oven for another 2 minutes for a rare. Go to about 5 or 6 minutes, 5 minutes. To a medium rare, you go about 10 minutes, you're going to go to a medium well, and you're going to pull that out, let it rest for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and then slice it on an angle, and you're going to have one of the most beautiful, succulent, amazing pieces of meat you've ever had in your life.
And this is so versatile because, as you said, from here you can add all the different flavors once you get comfortable with the basic technique. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the temperature you're kind of looking at when it comes out of the oven is about 120-ish, because you want it about a 125 if you're checking with a meat thermometer, and that should give you that sort of rare, medium rare. That's what I always look for in my duck. Is that about the temperature you're looking for, Chef?
If you want to get to that rare to medium rare stage, that's a good temp.
Yeah.
And then it'll rest a little bit and carry a little bit, but not that much because we're not talking about a big piece of meat. And that's absolutely perfect. So for people that are first getting used to it, using a thermometer is really important when cooking. I try not to now because it just takes too much time, but that's a perfect way to put it out there. And there's so many great thermometers now that'll be able, you just get it in there real quick, pull it out, and you get, I just don't like to puncture the juice as well before it rests. So, but it's really important to do that. So
it can help you kind of as you're learning to you know, and what I recommend, when you take that temperature and it's the right temperature, press it with your finger and then you'll start to learn what it feels like when it's done. And then when you're at, you know, nobody will get to chef's level, but when they aspire to your level, then they don't have to puncture the meat because that resting part that you said is very critical. Otherwise, we're going to cut it. The juice is going to run out and you've just ruined a beautiful duck breast.
Yeah. And I think and luckily, I find that duck breast is a juicy. Anything with dark meat makes me happy. You know me with chicken thighs; it's one of my favorite things in the world. But any darker meats tend to just have so much natural juice, and the cooking process on this is going to allow that to keep that way because we're slow cooking it and bringing it up to temp, and then the fat is part of the cooking process. It really will always be juicy, even when you cook it a little too much, and it doesn't hurt it that much. I just love you know, that pink or that little bit more medium rare feel to it. And if you're not comfortable with it, cook it a little bit more. Create a sauce that'll work with it. There's so many incredible sauces. Simple port wine sauce. We could get into duck a la orange someday with that. But there's a lot of cool. Once you master cooking a duck breast, you will never look back at it the same way. You could do it for company. You could do it for a regular night of the week. It won't be one of those fancy things you can only get in a restaurant.
And what I loved is, you know, you talked about slow cooking, but hey, you're whipping this up, you know, within 15, 20 minutes. And, to go to go full circle here, that, you know, the circle of the hungry man that we're doing. If I remember right, that's how long you had to cook those freaking things anyway in the oven back in the day.
Exactly. But that's it. That's what we keep going back to. Have you and I made a dish that takes more than 20 minutes altogether? I mean, that's what we do all the time. And if we could show people that, they will never buy processed or pre-made food ever again.
Hey, Chef, I want to thank you so much for being here today. And hey, folks, until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.